You're listening to RTI Audio, powered by Rocky Top Insider. This is the RTI Press Pass with Rick Butler and Ryan Shumpert.
Everybody, welcome in to the Rocky Top Insider Press Pass. Today is Wednesday. Today is April 20th. It is a beautiful day outside in Knoxville, Tennessee. We are here ready to talk a little bit of Tennessee sports action as always. My name is Rick Butler. With me right here to my left, my good friend, Ryan Shumpert. Ryan, how are you, my friend? How's the day been? How has the week been? What's new with you?
Doing well. Glad that the week's getting a little bit better now that it's warming up a little bit. We got the sun out on Tuesday, yeah. And now some warm weather today, so that's making my week better.
Yeah, I hear you there. The weather really has been all over the place. I mean, the last couple weeks, you've had a little bit of rain. We had the snow, the sleet a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
I watched I don't know if you watch these, I would imagine that you might, but have you seen the video series that Tennessee puts out? I believe it's called The Juice. Kind of documenting some things that go on during the offseason.
I watched the hype one they put out the other day, if that's the one you're getting at.
Yes, that's the one. Okay, so it's like a six-minute video, and it's documenting Coach Heupel, and they're showing the spring game, and you and I were both there, and I mean,
no shots of us, by the way.
No shots of us.
A little disrespectful.
I couldn't believe it. I felt like we were right there in the middle of the end zone waiting to be shot, but no, okay, that's besides the point. I couldn't help but watch that video just like, man, this looks like such a great day for football. Oh my gosh, like the guys look electric out there. None of the shots show how just ridiculously cold and miserable the weather conditions were.
Yeah, well, that was the thing is it was, as you experienced a full day of it because you were over at Nico at Farragut that morning, but the whole day it was just like back and forth from cloudy, sleeting, a little bit of snow to sunny and not awful, just cold. And it seemed like they chose all the shots from the sunny, slightly sunny, not as cold session.
Hey, I'll be honest with you. I think those are the shots that I pulled from my own camera as well. You know, made it look a little bit easier, a little bit nicer. But we will certainly get into a little bit more football stuff. You had a ton of recruits on campus for that weekend. We're going to be talking about some of those recruits coming up in a bit. But hey, we want to stretch things out a little bit. You know, there are a ton of topics to get into just revolving Tennessee sports right now. So we want to dive into all of it. And Ryan, I think probably the best thing to start out with is baseball. Just considering it's the one that's in season right now, and there are so many storylines. You have a marquee matchup coming up this weekend in Gainesville against Florida. So big SEC East, big rivalry matchup going on. But I think the talk of the town for the last couple days really has been Tennessee's going to be playing the first two games of that series without Tony Vitello. Head coach gets suspended last Saturday against Alabama. A little bit of an altercation there. Most of it was verbal, right? You had Frank Anderson going out to check on Chase Dolander after he got hit. And correct me if I'm wrong here. Let's stop right there. Pause. What has the injury been like for Dolander?
So it's just a severe bone bruise in his upper right arm. So they avoid the fracture, which was really the concern on Saturday night after the game. And he exited, obviously, right after that happened and came back in a sling. Didn't look good. But they avoid the break. It's just they're calling it day by day. But it's one of those day by days where he's not going to be back out there throwing tomorrow. He's got to get the swelling down. Then he's got to throw again and get comfortable with it. So they're not ruling out, and I won't rule out him starting this weekend at Florida, but I would be surprised if that happens. It seems like he'll probably be out a week, maybe two. But certainly in general, and you're talking about it, we talked about it a few weeks ago, how much more usage he's had, and really all Tennessee's pitchers have had than they have in the past. So the fact that it's not a serious long-term injury, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world to get a few other guys, whether that be Blade Tidwell or Camden Sewell, some more innings on the weekend, and then allow Dolander to be a little bit more fresh when tournament play rolls around.
Yeah, you know, when he was coming down to that pitching motion right there, he was not able to dodge the baseball necessarily. No. But Tennessee dodges the bullet with it not necessarily being a broken bone or a fracture or something along those lines. But again, so he goes down in that Saturday game. You have Frank Anderson come out. He gets tossed. You have Tony Vitello come out to argue that. He gets tossed. Tony Vitello makes contact with the umpire. But I don't know, you know, that's kind of in the past for the last couple of days, and you and I certainly talked about that on RTI, just different sources. What have you seen from the team just in these next couple of days? obviously that's some adversity to go through. You lose, you not only lose the midweek game, you know, a couple days leading into it, but then you lose on Friday against Alabama. Your head coach goes out. What did you see from Tennessee and just the way that they were able to rebound?
Well, an incredibly impressive response, and yeah. I wrote about it on Friday night that, you know, two losses, it's not, you know, it's a fine line to toe writing that, where it's two losses, this is not close to the end of the world for Tennessee.
No.
But for the first time all year, Tennessee kind of has, they got to beat Hunter, and they have the pressure, they're kind of back on their heels a little bit.
Sure.
And that just went to the nth degree when, obviously, you lose your pitching coach and your head coach in the middle of the first inning of the first game, or I mean in the second game, and that stuff's big, especially when you lose both those guys, and in baseball you don't have nearly as many coaches, and that changes a lot of responsibilities. But to me, even bigger than that was the fact that you lost Chase Dolander, and the day after your Friday night starter struggles and you have to use your bullpen a lot, you got to scrounge eight innings together with your bullpen, and all of a sudden, getting back and winning that series not only became, you know, just a challenge because it means winning two games in a row, but a lot harder path. And I didn't do anything to stop Tennessee. I mean, they dominated Saturday and Sunday. Camden Sewell came in, and he's been a guy who I think is maybe as talented as anyone else in Tennessee's bullpen. It was fantastic to end the last season, but had been inconsistent. He comes in. Really, he gets a line drive off his foot, too. I think he has a bone bruise on that foot, but he pitches through it and was really effective. I thought you could tell when he had the field the ball or run the first that he was not 100%, but when he was on the mound, he looked good, and it continued on kind of throughout the rest of the weekend. Beam gave Tennessee another good start on Sunday, but Tennessee's bullpen, really for a second straight weekend, was called on a lot more, and their depth and their talent really showed up, and Tennessee's bats got going like you expect them to at Lindsey Nelson Stadium, and it led to two pretty decisive victories for the Vols to finish the weekend.
Yeah, man, I agree with you in a lot of ways. I think that you look at just what was in front of the team, and you're right. You know, they were kind of in a position where they were backed up against the wall a little bit, but I think you also got to take into consideration it's not necessarily a place that they've been this season, right? You can name other times that, you know, they've been on their heels a little bit, but as far as this season goes, Tennessee has not been there, especially when it comes to conference play, right? You have a rival in your home, and they're fired up. They're ready to play this series. So I agree. I thought that, you know, for Tennessee to be able to lose their head coach but then still come out and play their style of baseball, I didn't think that was going to go away, right, with Tony out of the dugout, that this was going to, you know, turn into a very, you know, nice and welcoming team onto the field with no attitude at all. Not that, but certainly I was impressed. Then you get to yesterday, though, a little bit of a weird midweek game. Tennessee able to find the victory there in the late innings of the game, but for the first four or five innings of the game, neither team could find a hit. Tennessee hosted Bellarmine yesterday in Knoxville. Neither team could find a hit for a while. On the Tennessee side of things, Xander Sechrist looked very, very good.
Yeah, he's been a solid guy, and it just kind of adds into the rotation. I think the Missouri weekend he got an inning, but he's been a guy that's been really impressive really throughout the year as the midweek starter. I definitely think yesterday was one of his better outings, but it just kind of shows the depth of this team that he is not someone that isn't going to be called on really a lot in the bullpen in the weekend. And even last year, I mean, Tennessee has obviously had a really good team last year, but there's so many differences in this year that I think maybe the common fan doesn't notice. And Xander Sechrist, this Xander Sechrist this year would have gotten innings in the weekend last year. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And now he's Tennessee's seventh, eighth guy in their bullpen. So
yeah,
it is crazy how Tennessee's elevated its pitching talent. And I think that's something we saw interesting this weekend is last year's team. You know, I think a lot of people think of this year's team and last year's team as being common because they're both really good, sure, and they both play with that attitude that's become a staple and personality that's become, they don't mind being the villains. All those things that were true about last year's team are true about this year's team. But last year's team, you know, they were not as talented as the most talented teams in the country, and they had a lot of fight your way back into the games they were losing. 9 walk-off wins last year, 4 or 5 of them on home runs. Tennessee doesn't have a walk-off win all year because they haven't been tested. They haven't been put in that situation. So I thought that really it opened my eyes to it this weekend more, that while this team has the attitude, they haven't faced those same sort of adversity, and they don't have maybe they can try to play with it like they're the underman, they're the underdog, but I don't think they think they're an underdog. I think they understand that they're the hunted, where even though Tennessee was in the top 5 for a lot of last season and had a really good team, they were still the underdog. It was still their first breakthrough year in the top of the SEC and the top of the country, and they didn't have as much talent as the Arkansas and Vanderbilts of the world. And this year, they're as talented as anybody. You see that attitude just kind of in a different way, but in this weekend, you kind of saw it in a reverse way with Tennessee getting knocked in the mouth on Friday night, facing more early adversity on Saturday, and from there just being the hunter and going out and really dominating the weekend.
Yeah, you know, to make the comparison to Tennessee football a little bit, this isn't going to be a perfect analogy, but you know, when you think of Tennessee football, the nationwide thought on Tennessee is that, hey, they have this electric offense because you see them scoring points, you see them moving the ball down the field, and the defense a little bit, you know, it plays second fiddle. I think some people look at this Tennessee team and you say, hey, you know, they always show me the stats about how many home runs Tennessee hits, and I always see them, you know, circling the bases, and it feels like Tennessee's got the bags loaded multiple times a game, every single game. But you're right, the pitching has been such a welcomed blossom into success this year that I think Tennessee has really taken advantage of and really valued. But I want to pause right there, though, and I want to talk about Tennessee's Friday night starter, Chase Burns. What are your thoughts on Chase Burns after the last two games? Because I have the stats for you right here. Versus Missouri, just under three innings pitched, three hits, two runs, four walks, and five strikeouts. And then last weekend against Alabama, does go three innings, gives up seven hits, five runs in that time. Where are you right now and just kind of what Burns is bringing to that Friday night spot and beyond from that?
Yeah, well, it's certainly some adversity. And he, in a Missouri start, I think he was bad in just about every way. And against Alabama, to me, it was a little bit different because he looked great the first inning. He looked crisp. He gives up a couple solo home runs,
yep,
which are, you know, it's a staple. If you're going to play at Lindsey Nelson Stadium, you're going to give up home runs. And that's a common phrase from Tennessee's pitching coach, Frank Anderson. Solo home runs aren't going to beat us. And from that, seemed like his confidence seemed to crack a little bit. He started offering up some walks, which was his issue the week before at Missouri. So two bad starts in a row. I don't know. You're certainly not hitting the panic button on it. I think you start to – you're kind of monitoring it as a concern right now. And I think another bad start this weekend at Florida would kind of be, all right, do you look to move Blade sure. Tidwell into a spot? But you even look at it. He's kid's a true freshman, and Blade Tidwell, as good as he was, I think we all look back on his season last year with – very positive thoughts about it, and freshman All-American. And he had a stretch of 4 weeks, really right around the same time that this started, maybe a week earlier, a third week to sixth week in SEC play, where he struggled on the mound. He had some bad outings, and he got his rhythm back. So I think it's natural, freshman wall, but certainly something to monitor going forward. And Evan Russell said it a few weeks ago that Tennessee's pitching staff is the strength of the team.
Yeah,
and it's kind of your point about all the home runs and stuff. It's the pitching staff is the strength. And I think that's what matters the most when you get to Omaha, when you're talking about Tennessee's bats are good enough to maybe to get back to Omaha with the pitching just being good. But if Tennessee wants to win the College World Series, I think the pitching has to hit its full potential. And I think for that to happen, Chase Burns has to be really dynamic. So I think it's certainly something worth watching this weekend in Gainesville.
Chase Burns on the mound this Friday night in Gainesville, like Ryan just told you, at 6:30 p.m. Eastern time. Then the two teams will they'll run it back the next day at the same exact time, 6:30 p.m., and then Sunday at noon, Tony Vitello returns from his suspension. He will be back coaching the Tennessee baseball team coming up on Sunday of this week. And Ryan, any last baseball thoughts?
No, none of the games on SEC Network this weekend, so that'll be a note. Everyone will have to stream all of that.
That's wait, say that again?
None of the games on SEC Network this weekend. All SEC Network Plus, all streaming only. I had noticed that yesterday looking at the schedule. I kind of figured Florida-Tennessee, pretty big series. You might get a couple on TV, but nope. We'll all have to settle streaming.
All right, so get ready to go scroll about 20 tabs into the college baseball section to find the Tennessee baseball team.
Well, I'm a searcher. You gotta use
really?
The search bar. You type in.
Search?
I search. Because
you don't
of that,
scroll?
Because of that reason. You gotta go for the SEC Network
wow.
Plus streams. You gotta go so far
wow.
to find it. You go
wow.
type in TENN and click on it. Oof. And that'll be the first thing that comes up. Save you some time.
You think you know a guy, and then you learn that he's a searcher, not a scroller. You learn something new every day. All right, Ryan, that is enough of the baseball talk. We let off the show with it, though. I want to get into some of this recruiting news. It's kind of the talk of the football world right now with spring camp wrapping up, or actually that is in the rearview mirror at this point. Let's go ahead and take a break right here, come back on this side, and see if we can get into some football action with the recruiting news that's been happening this week. That's coming up on the horizon. Don't go anywhere. Rocky Top Insider Press Pass.
We'll be right back. And now, back to the show.
Rick Butler, Ryan Shumpert back here on the Rocky Top Insider Press Pass. It is Wednesday, April 20th. We are hanging out talking a little bit of Tennessee sports. Already talked about baseball. Led the show off talking a little bit of football, and that's what we will circle back to right now. Ryan, on the Tennessee football side of things, Tennessee got a little bit of good news and had a little bit of bad news over the week. Which one would you like to start with?
I always say start with the bad news so you can end with the good news.
Is that how you are, just like in life?
Yeah. Well, if I get asked that question, do you want the bad news or good news first? I say bad news first.
Okay. So for Tennessee, it was an elite recruit that they were looking at. Kyler Casper, 4-star wide receiver from Arizona. We've talked about this guy on the podcast before. We have certainly written about him numerous times on RockyTopInsider.com. But this is a guy that Tennessee really was recruiting hard in the last month. If you go back to about almost 1 month ago today, March 21st is when Nico Iomaliava committed to Tennessee. Just a couple of days after his commitment, Nico called out two players in specific that he wanted to recruit to Tennessee. He called out 4-star wide receiver Kyler Casper, and he also called out 5-star wide receiver Carnell Tate. We'll get to Carnell Tate in a couple minutes, but Casper was one of those players that Tennessee was targeting. Tennessee was able to bring in both players to Knoxville just a couple of weekends ago for that spring game, bring them all in at the same time, get these quarterbacks and these wide receivers to get to know each other, try to get on the same page. And it felt like up until his commitment, Tennessee was in a pretty good position. I mean, I thought that it was a little bit of a coin toss. It felt like Tennessee was the one of the final two teams with Oregon. You look over at On3, and I believe that they had Tennessee as the favorites. You look over at 247 Arrivals, and I believe that they had Oregon as the favorite. So it was a little bit of a coin toss going into it. But Tennessee does not capitalize. They do miss out on Kyler Casper. Obviously not a breaking recruit to the class. I don't know if really how many are going to be, especially in April right now. But this was a guy that Tennessee was targeting. Tennessee fans at least had on their radar. And Tennessee does miss out to Oregon for Kyler Casper.
Certainly, and like you said, I think what stands out the most is that he was just a guy that Nico immediately brought up when he committed that he wanted to get. And obviously they're both West Coast guys, not from the same area, but the same side of the country. And like you said, not a huge shock, but a guy Tennessee would like to have. And I think,
you know, and the other part of it, sorry to cut you off there, but Oregon was one of the other finalists for Nico too.
Yeah.
Right. So I at least thought, hey, there could be something there. Right. Again, not that Tennessee is now just going and taking Oregon's recruits, and if one did it, 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 were going to do it. But it did kind of feel like, okay, well, you know, maybe they have been talking. Maybe they were talking, you know, before Tennessee started coming and rumbling into these conversations. I at least thought that maybe there was at least a little bit of a connection there. Could that help Tennessee in that case? I think it did to at least just get in the door, but obviously goes to Oregon.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think getting in the door is the big thing. Who knows if he ever comes visits Tennessee if it wasn't for Nico committing. So you're right, and I think one of the interesting things looking at him is that he does announce that he's going to reclassify into the 2022 class too. So he will be in school this fall. I think that's just an extra element to it. I certainly don't think that would have dissuaded Tennessee any. If anything, I think that would have been even a bigger plus for Tennessee because I think they'll wide receiver is a position they'll probably look to add in 6'5" the transfer portal.
6'5" wide receiver. I think they could have used that.
Yeah, and I, you know, they may be still looking for more of an immediate impact guy. You don't know someone who's reclassifying in the middle of April of their junior year to come enroll in college the next, you know, 2-3 months later, how effective they're going to be. But still, certainly a guy Tennessee would want it in a tough blow.
Yeah, that is kind of a weird timeline.
Yeah.
It's starting to happen a little bit more frequently, I feel like. Not that I have all the examples in front of me, but I feel like the reclassifying, just ever since maybe, and anybody can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I feel like ever since the pandemic kind of started to shift these timelines around a little bit, or at least give people an extra year or two here or there, I feel like it's at least maybe happening more frequently just across the college landscape in general, reclassifying into somewhere else or moving into a different class. Or, you know, then obviously it does start to trickle in and the conversation starts to turn into transfer portal and NIL and all that stuff. And Lane Kiffin went off on all this last week. And frankly, I thought he was right on a lot of the thoughts he said. But all that being said, it is a fascinating deal. And you know, like you said, I think that Tennessee could have used a little bit of that talent, especially if it was getting reclassified. But like you said, there's still guys out there in the transfer portal that I think Tennessee is going to be looking at. Who knows what the roster is going to fully look like come this fall.
Yeah, I mean, I would certainly expect more movement on it. And before then, Heupel was asked about that specific numbers, kind of that stuff last week. It is in the spring press conference and unsurprisingly didn't tip his hand at any of that. But
no.
And you're right. I think on the transfer front, I mean, it's been a thing with basketball for a long time, and I feel like increasingly, but I never had really seen it in football, and I feel like I've seen – a handful of examples over. Yeah. And I do wonder if,
maybe not a ton, but a handful. I feel like that's pretty
good. And I do wonder if the transfer portal maybe encourages that a little bit, because there's less pressure on getting the decision right the first time, and you have that option to transfer. And certain, I can think of three instances off the top of my head with the basketball program since Barnes has been here. Obviously, the two easy ones this year, Tomba and Huntley Hatfield, both those guys transfer. And then Jalen Cohn was a point guard who went to Virginia Tech over Tennessee and reclassified. Tennessee wanted to reclassify as well, and I know he entered the transfer portal too. I don't know where he ended up at, but obviously that's, again, very small examples of that. But I do wonder if that comes into play at all.
I think it has to. I think you just hit the nail on the head. Like, that's got to be a large point going into this, because, again, you do have that freedom now to say, hey, if things didn't work out in that first year, or just no, I mean, you go back to Lane Kiffin's conversation on the Rich Eisen show last week. He was saying, dude, if you're Bryce Young, like, even playing in the national championship with Alabama next year, everybody knows that you're going back to Alabama. Why would you not just throw your name into the transfer portal, see what you can get from other places? And then Alabama has to now come back and say, hey, well, you know, okay, well, what are they going to do? Well, this is what we will do. It's a whole mess. And so I think you're right. As all these transfer portal NIL situations continue to occur in these sports, I wonder if the reclassification process also kind of starts to trickle into that and becomes almost a third branch of that wheel. Because, again, like you said, there's just so much less pressure to stay at a place, and frankly, you aren't locked into it at all.
Yeah, I think you see this all the time. Again, I'm speaking more to basketball than football, but you're much less likely to take a flyer on a recruit now than you are to go to the transfer portal and say, hey, we've already seen this guy play. Sure. And I think it almost maybe goes the other way, to where if you are going to take a flyer on the kid, why not take a kid that's more talented, who's a year younger, and try to develop him and see what you get once you get to campus.
It's a weird world out there.
It is. It's crazy.
It's one of those things where it's almost, you know, so much of this is unfolding as we are experiencing it. It's a little bit of a trial and error process as you're going through it. So I think that you and I and everybody else, I think we'll continue to get a better understanding just as things happen, because that's kind of the way to learn it right now.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I think there's been a lot of that for coaches and administrators at these schools. I mean, the NCAA didn't do a whole lot to set this up and put a lot of parameters around it. So it's, I think, for everybody, us and coaches and players and everyone involved, it's kind of learning on the fly.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's flip to the other side of the page, though. The good news that Tennessee got this week, they had the number one ranked recruit in the state of Tennessee in the Volunteer State commit. What was that, yesterday?
Yeah, yesterday.
Okay, Tuesday. There you go. Yesterday already, committed right there at noon. Murfreesboro defensive lineman Caleb Herring. Ryan, talk to me a little bit about what this guy brings.
Well, he's a guy that's long been on Tennessee's radar. And he's the number one player in the state, so you expect that. I think he's been a priority ever since Josh Heupel and his staff got here back in February of 2021. And look, I think Elijah Herring, his older brother, was one of, if not Tennessee's first commit back in last year's cycle. And he wasn't as big as a recruit, but certainly a guy that they prioritized, and I think immediately set them up in a good spot for Herring's recruitment. I've seen some of his quotes, and I don't know who was to, so sorry I can't properly credit whoever he told us to, but he didn't make a huge deal about, you know, saying his brother was a big reason why he went to Tennessee. So I think Tennessee did a good job of separating him and making him a priority on his own. But I would say, behind Nico, probably the best get Tennessee's gotten since Heupel's been here. You beat out Georgia, where he'd been on campus this spring. Auburn's another school that had been in the mix. I believe he visited there for the Iron Bowl back in November. So a lot of big-time programs going after him. And certainly, I think, when you look at Tennessee and you look at the way they play with their offense, you're going to need pass rushers in general, just because you're going to be ahead in a lot of games with as good as your – I mean, how many games last year, even the games that Tennessee ended up losing by three touchdowns, did they – get out to an early lead in those games. Sure. And that's the old Indianapolis Colts with Peyton Manning. You get yourself the quarterback, then you get yourself the pass rushers, because you're going to be playing from ahead a lot. So I think there's a ton of emphasis just in general when I look at how Tennessee's going to build a defense and getting edge rushers. And he's one of the best ones in the country, 6'5" frame, really long, and just an elite athlete, and should be a guy that Tennessee develops into a really good player.
Yeah, I think that everything you said is exactly right, and there are so much great upside about this player. But I really am fascinated in just kind of the recruiting part of it, and I do agree. I think it's really interesting that they did kind of separate the brothers in the recruitment a little bit, right? Didn't necessarily make it a, you know, oh, you got to come here because your brother's here, and you know he wants you and all that kind of stuff. But you know that that was a big part in the recruiting process. I think this was a great job from Josh Heupel and his staff just to understand, you know, that, hey, this is an important family in the state of Tennessee for the football world. We want to get in, go with this family. Elijah Herring can bring something to the table. That's why Tennessee went out and recruited him and got a commitment from him. And, of course, that, that does lead you into a better position for Caleb Herring, and that is what Tennessee was able to go out and do yesterday. So they secure the, a commitment from the number one high school player in the state of Tennessee, according to both On3 and 247 Sports. Not a bad pickup.
No, not at all. And I think the good things Tennessee did to close their 22 recruiting class, none of those were in state, and I think that was kind of the glaring hole is that 2022 class in the state of Tennessee was as good as it's been in a long time. And Tennessee signs just two guys from that class, only one in the top 20. Now they have eight commits this year, already five of those guys from the state of Tennessee. Three of those guys are in the top 20. Granted, the class isn't quite as deep as it was last year. But to get the number one guy to go along what they already had, they got Trevor Duncan last week from Catholic and then Nathan Robinson, which was a big-time battle out in East Tennessee, or excuse me, out in West Tennessee with Kentucky and Ole Miss. So, and those are, look, I don't think there's a lot of shame when Alabama comes in and beats you out.
It's going to be tough.
Yeah, I mean, and the same with Georgia, which is what makes getting this Caleb Herring get so impressive. But those were the battles Tennessee lost last year.
I mean, even on the west side of the state, right? Arkansas is a program that's on the rise. They went out, and I don't know the kid's name off the top of my head, but they got a commitment from the number five player in the state of Tennessee yesterday. So there's still a lot of talents and football programs around you that you're competing with.
Luke Brown, yeah, is his name, and it didn't seem like Tennessee, at least I never saw Tennessee linked a ton to him. But I would put Arkansas in this category of Tennessee has to go back, and you go back to last year's class, Isaiah Horton, Miami beats him out for him, the Wade twins, Kentucky beats him out. They got to start beating the Kentuckys. They got to start beating, well, Simpson, yeah.
Okay, I see what you're saying, though. Yeah. That's an Alabama commit. You're saying these other schools, maybe a little bit more of the mid-tier schools that are coming into Tennessee and recruiting, those are the ones that you really need. Because I think in a lot of ways, you look at just Tennessee football in general, and you say, okay, well, is Tennessee going to be going out there next year on the field and competing toe-to-toe with Georgia or so? No, right? But what Tennessee needs to do in the process of getting back to relevancy, in the process of getting back to where the football program wants to be, you do have to establish a little bit of dominance over those mid-to-low teams in the conference, right? And I think what you're saying is, hey, that's not just on the football field during the regular season. That has to be the outcome during the entire year on the recruiting trail as well.
Yes, I mean, that's exactly what I'm trying to say. And I think it's in recruiting, it's even more than the SEC. It's just general programs that are comparable to you, programs that are rebuilding. But I think it's even more. It's an added emphasis when it's an SEC team. I think it's an added emphasis when it's Kentucky, which is what, obviously, that was a few weeks ago now, but Tennessee beat out the Wildcats for Nathan Robinson. And Kentucky's had a ton of success in this state. And I think Tennessee getting to where it wants to go and winning some battles, it starts with winning some battles in the state of Tennessee, and I think it's more than just about trying to beat out Georgia or Alabama for a kid, which is going to be really, really hard. It's about beating out Kentucky and Arkansas's Ole Misses of the world.
Yeah, that's a great point. Hey, one more recruiting note that I want to hit just because I mentioned it earlier. Carnell Tate, you go back a month ago before Ian Maliava's commitment, and Carnell Tate was pretty much a lock to Ohio State. I believe it was somewhere around 92 to 94% confidence on three. Fast forward a month later, and Tennessee is now actually the favorite to land five-star wide receiver Carnell Tate. And I think it's been a massive month for Tennessee on the recruiting trail, just for him specifically. Ryan, you go back to all the conversation that we just had about Kyler Casper. A lot of that is still true about Carnell Tate as well, right? He was the other player that Nico called out by name. He was another player that was in Knoxville during that weekend for the spring game, for that camp, for the recruiting visit, the family weekend, all that good stuff. And I think that Tennessee really has made a lot of strides in that effort right now. He is a guy that is reportedly scheduled to make his commitment sometime this month. Obviously, the days are winding down, so maybe that gets pushed back a little bit. I'm not entirely positive. But I do think that as things stand right now, Tennessee has a decent chance to land Carnell Tate. And boy, would that be a big deal, because he, over there at IMG Academy in Florida, one of his teammates, Devin Hyatt, who that last name should sound familiar, brother of Jalen Hyatt. I just think that, you know, if Tennessee can really work something, especially with Kyler Casper now going to Oregon, Tennessee can work something right there with both Carnell Tate and Devin Hyatt at IMG. That could be a big sign of success for the future. So that's my only last recruiting note.
Yeah, and that kind of goes back to something I meant to say on the Casper receivers aspect is with Nico, with this offense, you're not going to have a hard time finding good receivers to want to come play in this system. So I think this is a further example of that. I think Tennessee, like you said, made a bunch of headways when he was on campus with Casper earlier this month. So it should be worth watching. It does seem like it. Maybe Tennessee has gone up to the top, but I 100% think Ohio State is still very much in this one. So it'll be interesting to watch and interesting to follow to the finish line.
All right, Ryan. Well, we don't have much more to get into, but we do have a little bit of basketball to talk about. So let's go ahead and catch a break right now, then come back on the other side, talk about hoops. Don't go anywhere. Rocky Top Insider Press Pass.
We'll be right back. And now, back to the show.
All right, here we go. Back here on the Rocky Top Insider Press Pass. Rick Butler, Ryan Shumpert, closing off the third leg of our relay today right now, talking a little bit of Tennessee basketball. And, Ryan, obviously, basketball not even close to being in season right now. The season is far in the rearview mirror as well. But like any sport going on, recruiting is always going to be at the forefront of where these programs are going. Let's talk about a couple players right now who Tennessee does have a focus on. One of those players being a guy that you wrote about for RockyTopInsider.com. You can go and check that out there along with a lot of other great work. But a player by the name of Tyreek Key, graduate transfer from Indiana State. Tell me what you know about him and what you know about where he is right now.
Yeah, so he's
got, as of Wednesday, we should say.
Yeah, we talked about it last week. He had set up a visit to Tennessee and believe still here right now. At least was the visit was I believe set to end on Wednesday. So he's a guy that Tennessee has kind of been connected to for a while. Obviously, he's from Clay County, and I think Tennessee kind of started recruiting him a little bit late in his high school journey. Ends up going to Indiana State, and then last year, he entered the transfer portal, and Tennessee was rumored to be involved there with him, at least kicking the tires with him. And then he ends up coming back to Indiana State and having what I believe was shoulder surgery.
That is correct. Yeah, he missed the whole season.
Yeah, so he didn't play at all last year, and you wonder maybe that had maybe he knew that, and that was part of the reason he went back to school. But a guy that I think Tennessee is after, as well as a couple other schools. He's been to Oklahoma, Texas Tech, and Ole Miss, two other schools that are in his top four that he's planning on visiting. Again, I haven't seen any official date set up for those other two. So one that's worth watching, and a guy Tennessee, obviously we talked about last week, they missed out on Brandon Murray, but another kind of guy at that similar off-ball guard position that Tennessee could be going after.
Yeah, man, I mean, you kind of look at just the state of Tennessee basketball at, right now, and not that it's any kind of bad, but one of the most prominent things that they're going to be working to figure out over the next couple months or so, they have four scholarship spots to fill. We know that Kennedy Chandler is off to the NBA. We know that Quentin Tomba, and Huntley Hatfield are all in the transfer portal. Have any announced a destination yet?
Just Quentin, who's going to ECU, was Barnes announced for him
before
he
entered
the portal.
We're at the press conference. That was one of the most ridiculous things that just, I almost couldn't believe it. Barnes did basically make the announcement for him while he was talking at the presser, but, you know, obviously those guys must have talked quite a bit and have a great relationship for Barnes, but what's the word I'm looking for here? Not like shocking in
strange.
A bad way, but strange. There you go.
Yeah, you don't see that much, but hey, as the media, I appreciated Barnes' honesty because you had heard
straight
of it
to work.
Yeah, exactly. It left no doubt for us, and he gave us a straight answer.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so four spots to fill. We just talked about Tyreek Key, one of the players that Tennessee is talking to this week. The other player that has been linked to Tennessee quite a bit this week, and you know we've talked about it throughout the week a good bit, just at different times, but Yuri Collins, a player who entered the transfer portal on Monday and immediately was being linked to Tennessee by various people. Some of it was more so rumors than reports, but no doubt about it, Tennessee has certainly been, or at least Collins is very likely on the radar of Tennessee. What do you know about Collins and just kind of where Tennessee could be in this whole play?
Well, he, you know, we talked about it. I don't even remember which podcast it was. We talked about Tennessee needing another point guard. The pair was Zakai Ziegler because you're just putting a lot of pressure on B.J. Edwards, the four-star freshman out of Catholic, if you don't. And I can't think of a much better fit to plug in than Collins. He, 6 foot, was in his junior season last year at St. Louis. Really good St. Louis team. One that just missed out on the NCAA tournament. Was one of the better mid-major programs this year. I think was really in the hunt to get an out-large bid. And he averaged 11.1 points and a nation's best 7.9 assists per game with them. Really good passer. Really good point guard. And to me, he fits into exactly what Tennessee needs. He brings some three-point shooting, too. I believe shot 36% on the year last year, though he has kind of fluctuated in different years. He's shot a couple of them. He shot much worse. But a guy that makes a lot of sense, like you said, immediately when he went into the portal and even really some buzz before, because he originally declared for the NBA draft, was going to test those waters. And even when he did that, there was a little bit of buzz that if he came back to college, he might be looking to enter the portal and Tennessee would be interested. So I think it seems like Rod Clark has some connections there. He before he got into college, was at Sunrise Christian in Kansas City, or excuse me, in Kansas. I'm not exactly sure where Kansas it is. And obviously that's not super far from St. Louis, and you wonder about connections there. But when watching some stuff on him and looking at him, the one thing that they play in the same conference as George Mason, where Kim English is at now, and that game, it had popped on my YouTube feed is when I kind of watched some Uri Collins highlights of George Mason versus St. Louis, and I thought, well, yeah, I wonder if maybe Kim English is given Barnes any sort of scouting report. That game, which did go into double overtime, he played 47 minutes. He played a ton of minutes in that game.
Okay.
He scored 35 points and dished out 13 assists.
Yeah, pretty good.
And watching that, not only did he do that, he hit a game, a step-back game-tying three within the last 30 seconds of regulation.
Oh.
And then in double overtime, George Mason hit a three with like 7 seconds left to tie the game, and he went coast-to-coast and hit the game winner. So, and that was – and then you look at his – obviously, I haven't watched every game he played all year. But looking at the numbers from having watched the, not even just his highlights, but the 8-10-minute highlight video of that game, I imagine was the best game he's probably played in his college tenure. So it's kind of funny that a former Barnes assistant got an up-close look at it and had to pay the price for it as George Mason lost that game. But to me, a guy that certainly fits really well into what Tennessee's trying to do and would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That is going to be certainly a player to watch over the next week or so. Obviously, during this offseason, to go along with Tyreek Key, another player that Tennessee fans are going to want to have an eye on right now, just kind of as the transfer portal continues to work itself out. It's a weird world. We've already talked about that, heck, today already, but no doubt about it, it's going to be an interesting case in basketball. Ryan, we had a little bit of breaking news in the basketball world as we've been recording this podcast here on a Wednesday. How about this from ESPN and Jeff Borzello? Kentucky forward Oscar Tshiebwe, the consensus men's basketball national player of the year, announced on Wednesday that he is returning to Lexington for his senior season. Are you surprised by this? What's your immediate reaction?
No, my immediate reaction is this is why NIL is awesome. Like, there's a ton of talk about the downsides of NIL and for reasons because it's not really legislated a whole lot right now from the NCAA. But Oscar Tshiebwe, and to me, Oscar Tshiebwe and Zakai Ziegler are the perfect examples of it, where this guy might not project as a great NBA player. They have limitations. Ziegler with his size, really it's the same limitation for Tshiebwe with his size, just at 6'8", as a true center. You don't see too many of those in the NBA. But instead of having, for financial reasons, having to only play 2-3 years of college, and you just have to make that jump at some point because those limitations aren't going to change, you have the chance to come back to school and make good money, the amount of money as you would make in the G League, or probably more in Tshiebwe's case. And to me, that's obviously it's helping out a school that Tennessee does not want to help out. But to me, this is a perfect example of why NIL is awesome. And Tshiebwe is likable to me, as likable as the guy as they come when you hear him, his story and his faith, you hear him talk about it. And I'm happy that he's able to get money and play basketball in college next year at a rate where he'll be able to be really effective. And like you just said, he was a national player of the year. So he's about as good as anyone in college basketball. And it's fortunate that it's still a viable option for him at this point.
Yeah, you know, you make an interesting point, and just kind of thinking about the Tennessee perspective of this, the Tennessee bubble of this, but you look back just a couple months ago when Cade Mays was kind of testing the waters with the NFL draft. I remember he said, and I can't remember the quote, but, hey, if I can make this amount of money, then, yeah, that would be a huge step towards me returning to Tennessee. Obviously, that wasn't able to get done for whatever reason, but that was still at least a thought process that you now knew for a fact was happening. And you're right, here it is on the basketball side of things as well. And for Oscar, I remember reading that, you know, some of the NIL stuff was a little bit tricky for him, just being a foreign player as well. So now that seems like that's been able to worked out, I think you're right. You know, for these athletes, rivalries aside or whatever else aside, it's great, right? It's great that a player is going to be able to take care of himself and make that money. I think you're right. Ziegler is the example from Tennessee, just kind of, you know, how much of an impact that can have or what can stand out. But yeah, it was just a little bit of breaking news. Wanted to get your thoughts on it right here as we're getting close to wrapping up the podcast.
Yeah, certainly a huge get for Kentucky. I think that seemed likely for a while. That's what was going to happen. I think it was a lot of kind of crossing the T's and checking the I's off for Sheboy, but should be get Kentucky right back in as good as anybody in the SEC next year, and we'll see if Jonas Adu, who I had nicknamed Oscar Sheboy Stopper this year, and probably the two best games he played was just how he played defense on Sheboy and what his length, the issues that it gave him. So we'll see that at least two more times next year, and we'll see if Sheboy has any adjustments for it, and we'll see what Jonas Adu looks like as a different player in his sophomore year.
That makes me think, okay, so Jonas had his game against Kentucky. Brandon had his breakout game against Auburn. We didn't get to really talk about this today, but it is on the website, rocky.bensinger.com. Brandon Huntley Hatfield revealed his top five, I believe, last weekend.
Yeah, last
after
weekend.
Entering the transfer portal. And sure enough, Auburn is one of his top five teams. So, you know, who knows? The list kind of, we were talking about this off air, the list kind of stretches five, how should I put this? Not really similar type of schools necessarily, but Brandon Huntley Hatfield could end up with Bruce Pearl at Auburn. So that would be an interesting one to look for.
Yeah, certainly. And after they lost, obviously, Jabari Smith and Walker Kessler. So mm-hmm. they have some of those guys, Cardwell off the bench is a guy I'm a big fan of, that stand out. But certainly they're looking for bodies inside, I think, especially scorers inside. And Huntley Hatfield certainly has that capability.
Right, he took that shoulder bump.
Yeah.
He took that shoulder bump right there against Auburn. Remember right there at the beginning of the game?
I do remember.
Fascinating. Fascinating stuff. Ryan, I think that's about going to wrap it up for us today, unless you have anything.
No, that's it. I got.
All right, well, let's go ahead and get out of here. That's going to do it for us today. Hey, thank you so much for hanging out and listening with us. Be sure to go check out RockyTopInsider.com for all of your Tennessee sports news and content. Make sure to keep up with Rocky Top Insider on all the social media. You can go follow us on Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. Hey, wherever you are, we are there as well as Rocky Top Insider. But that's going to do it for us today. So for Ryan Shumpert, I'm Rick Butler. You've been listening to the Rocky Top Insider Press Pass. We'll see you back next week.